Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Mod Hotep, to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Of course, my name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Filet, and this, of course, is a special edition of our weekly radio broadcast, New Day, Resurrection, Liberation. But you know what we do, family. We often bring special editions when it's called for. And of course, tonight, obviously, it is. We're going to talk more about something that we were talking about the other evening for our regular radio broadcast. Of course, we were talking last week or Saturday with Brother Lee Robinson, and we got a lot of good information. I mean, people were hitting me up, you know, telling me how much they really appreciated the information that was put out last Saturday's radio program, of course, with Brother Lee, and talking about his trip to Venezuela. And, of course, we talked about what's going on with Cuba. Well, tonight we're going to further that conversation, that dialogue, because this is something that we must keep in our discussions, our politically in charge discussion or ignited discussions. We've got to make sure that we keep you all up to date, and also what we can do. That's always a part of our conversation, and that is to give you the information, to give you the inspiration, but also some things that we can actually do to begin the process of resolution. And so we're going to talk about that tonight. We have a very special guest that's going to be joining us shortly. Mr. Carlos Labo will be joining us, of course. He and his colleagues have embarked upon something pretty, listen, you know, it goes without saying that when people are indeed determined and self-determined, there's very little we can't or won't do. And so we're going to hear tonight about an incredible journey, an incredible walk to make a statement, and not only to make a statement, but to raise and bring greater attention and again, action. That's what it's really about. Once you get the information, then you have a responsibility to take some action. And so we're going to first give you some information. Now, for those of you who may not be as aware of the situation with Cuba and the United States, we're going to kind of give you a general brief overview from a historical perspective. And then we're going to hear about what's going on right now with Mr. Labo and the constituents or the contingent that he has walking for miles to make the statement of ending the embargo, ending the blockade, let me put it that way. That's a more appropriate term. And again, you're going to hear why, you know, we continue to have this conversation and why we will continue to have it in the manner that we do, because it's so very important to connect the dots, as we say, to make certain that we are able to develop greater allyship, greater solidarity. It behooves us to recognize other people that are fighting, particularly this system, who has had its foot on our necks for centuries. And so, again, you know, we take the time as we fight for our own justice and liberation in this country. We always are here, open and ready to conversate, communicate, and support others who are also fighting for self-determination, freedom, and justice. So with that said, joining us tonight, along with Mr. Labo, is going to be our own Brother Lee Robinson. Africa on the Move is in the house. And we're also going to talk to one of our brothers who has been with us a few times as well. Our brother Bambozi Shango is going to be joining us too. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation, a very necessary conversation, as a matter of fact. Before I go to Brother Lee, to just give you a general history of what we're talking about, you hear the word blockade, but I mean, why? Why is there a blockade? Well, of course, you've heard us talk about this before. There are obvious reasons, of course, but it's deeper than, you know, what many might have heard, particularly through the mainstream media. But before I go to Brother Lee, and I'm going to have him to introduce Mr. Carlos Lavo, before I do that, I want to say to you all to please listen carefully. And also, what I'd like you to do is think about what it is that you, we, I, others can do in support of ending this blockade. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples, by the way, because even though, you know, there's a whole national thing going on and have been, particularly during the month of June, there's a lot of activities because, of course, the United Nations were having hearings and did, in fact, make a ruling. And I'm going to have Brother Lee to recap that for you as well. But there's stuff that can happen right in our communities, which is also very important. Some folks have done car caravans, some have done rallies, forums on Zoom and in the community. Well, there's even other things that we can do. I'm going to talk about that too. So without further ado, let's go to our live line and welcome our brother. Some people also call him Brother Africa. We're talking about Brother Lee Robinson, and he is joining us now. Hey, Brother Lee.
Hey, Sister African, how you doing? And hello to your audience. Like
wonderful.
Always, it's an honor to be on your program, and we're going to try to give people some information so they can use that as a tool for liberation. That's
absolutely
how we break our people and all the humanity from various forms of oppression. So we thank you for having us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, my brother. Anytime that we can be of assistance and of service, when it comes to providing information for our people, hey, listen, that's what we do. That's what we're here to do. And, again, it's always a pleasure and an honor to do that, you know, to make sure that our ancestors, I always remember the phrase that Baba Kwame Ture was known. He was known for many phrases, but one of the things that I certainly embrace and remember, and that is we must not fail our ancestors. I love that one, and I try to, you know, uphold that. But at any rate, so before we go to Mr. Lazo, I'm sorry, just a basic little general recap, because for those who might not have heard some of the previous programs or whatever, just kind of, you know, gives us just a little brief summary. And then we're going to go right into what's happening right now and why.
Let's back me on his brother, Carlos Lazo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's a brother who was born in Cuba. And right now he's on tour. He's on a protest march, or actually walk from Miami to Washington, D.C., which is 1,300 miles. He'll be holding a big rally on the 25th in D.C. There are over 25,000 signatures to present to the current administration demanding that they put an end to the blockade. Along with him, he had his team called Bridges of Love. In Spanish, I believe it's a Quante de Amos. And they are all Cubans, who were born in Cubans and now live in the U.S. They are walking, as I said earlier, from Miami to D.C. They are pilgrimaging, where their tour began on June 27th, and it will be 1,300 miles once they get to D.C. on July 25th at the White House. They will present President Biden with a petition signed by more than 25,000 people, as I stated earlier, to end the blockade against Cuba.
Yeah.
Now, his story is important. It's important because he was born not only in Havana and lived in Cuba for 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
He also came to make this demand. Understanding how he came to make this demand is the most important thing. Because, you know, we also say that to judge a man is not by where he at the present time, but the height that he came from and where he's going. And this is the most positive part about Brother Carlos and others like them. They may have started out on one position and through their experiences and come to their consciousness and understanding, and compare them to take another direction, a direction that we believe is correct direction, a positive direction. And this direction at this point in time is that we must fight to put an end to the ass blockade. There are no ifs, ands, or but about it. So they are one of the few voices out of Miami that is calling for this. They are very courageous Cubans who have taken the stand. But they have done this in the light of being on the right side. So we will honor this brother tonight by hearing the story, learning from the story and others. And, you know, we can say at this point in time, it was in 1988 when Carlos tried to leave Cuba by Iraq. He ended up spending 1 year in jail. 2 years later, he succeeded in leaving Cuba by raft, arriving in Key West, and later moving to Miami. So you can see there's been a struggle, a whole process in terms of how he has evolved to the point now where he's calling for lifting, putting an end to the U.S. blockade. So on that note, I think if there are anything else that we need to know about him, let's bring in Brother Carlos Lazaro and ask him, what is it that he would like to share with our listeners in terms of who he is? Brother Carlos?
Mm-hmm. All right. Let me open up Brother Carlos's mic. And there we are. Greetings to you, Brother Carlos. How are you this evening?
Can you listen to me? Can you hear me?
Yep, we hear you.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me here tonight. Thank you for you to allow me to be in your program, and also to Brother Lee for hosting us here in Richmond today. We went to different historical sites, and we are very grateful for the support from different people from the community, and especially from the African-American community. When we talk about the blockade, about the bargain, you were talking about the blockade. Sometimes people don't realize that right now we cannot even send remittances, money to our family in Cuba. I mean, this have been so wrong during so many years and so extreme to asphyxiate the Cuban people and the Cuban population that right now, in the middle of a pandemic, cannot send money to my aunt, to my sister, to anybody in Cuba. I cannot use, it's prohibited by the United States government that families send money through Western Union to their families. This is something that when you said this is happening in America, people won't believe it. I come from a long way to this position that I have today. As Brother Lee said, I was in prison in Cuba in 1988 because I tried to leave the country at that time. Then they put people in jail for that. And in 1991, I got another raft and I left to the United States. And finally, I was rescued a few miles from Key West. And since then, I have lived here half of my life in Cuba, half of my life here. In Cuba, I left behind friends, family, and I always have a good relationship with them. And I thank those people, my neighbors, my family, my community, for the person that I am today. Also, in the United States, I also achieved many of my dreams. I raised a family here. I study. I became a combat medic for the U.S. Army during the Iraq War. And one of the experiences that I have from the Iraq War, what I saw over there, what I witnessed over there as a combat medic, I didn't want to see that destruction and that fight for between Cuba and the United States or against any country. When I came back from Iraq, I tried to visit my two sons that at the time still live in Cuba, and the Bush administration implemented measures that prohibit Cuban Americans from visiting their families. We could just go once every 3 years. Imagine, I just came from Iraq during my 2 weeks of R&R, and I find that the Bush administration implement policies that prohibit me from visiting my family over there. I even end up testifying in the U.S. Senate about how un-American and how unfair it was that we couldn't see our families. I was fighting for democracy and for my country, for my adoptive country, and at the same time, my adoptive country prohibited from going over there. Things were kind of bad until President Obama arrived, and he lifted all those restrictions, and he started for the first time improving relationship with Cuba. We could visit our families and everything. During the last 10 years, I have been teaching first at the University of Washington, later on in public schools in Seattle. And I took my students to Cuba six times during the Obama years. And I found how the contact, people to people, how when you take Americans over there and they are able to talk to the Cuban people, to exchange with the Cuban people, to sing songs with the Cuban people, to be part of their communities, how that is good for the United States and how that is good for Cuba. And I was, I witnessed bridges of love between our two countries. I saw people who supposedly were supposed to be enemies now embracing each other, becoming friends. Mm-hmm. But then good things never last forever, right? President Trump arrived and he cut down all the educational programs and I couldn't take my students to Cuba anymore. But worse than that, in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of when the world needs more solidarity and more help and more like we are just one humanity, President Trump started cutting everything related to Cuba. He cut the reunification program, the ways that people emigrate from different countries were from Cuba, it was prohibited. He cut even the flight to Cuban provinces. Now we cannot fly to just one port in Cuba, it's open, one airport. And he also he closed the American Embassy in Havana. And he also cut in remittances. He basically prohibited us to help our families in the middle of the pandemic. He just cut that down. And not just in the United States, you know, because this embargo is extraterritorial. This applies to Western Union around the world, meaning that if you live in another country and you want to send money to families or friends in Cuba, you cannot do that. It's prohibited under the law. And then I want to raise my voice in the same way that I did during the Bush years. And last year we biked from Seattle to Washington, D.C., pedal for 3,000 miles. I went with my two sons and my two nephews, and we tried to go to the White House and ask President Trump to temporarily lift those sanctions because of the pandemic. He did nothing, right? And then candidate Biden came out and he said, you know, when I become president, I'm going to lift these sanctions against the family. Maybe I won't lift the embargo, but I will lift those sanctions for the Cuban people. And we were very hopeful that he would do it. And we support his campaign, and we raised money for him. We went outside trying to get votes, registration, everything. Now, Biden came, and 7 months later, he has been saying that he's studying how to leave just to reverse Trump sanctions. I mean, this is just like executive action. He doesn't need the Congress to do that. It's just reverting Trump action or just signing a new regulation where he will say that we are allowed to send money to our families. But he has done nothing. It seems that they are studying this like if they were studying to complete a PhD, because they never finish. It's just like just dragging their feet longer and longer and longer. People are getting desperate in Cuba. People doesn't have medications. The embargo, the blockade, for instance, prevents vessels that goes to Cuba. They cannot enter the United States for the next 6 months. It's prohibited.
Mm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
as you can imagine, many vessels don't want to go to Cuba because it's a small country, it doesn't have a lot of commerce. They prefer to have U.S. ports open instead of going to Cuba and doing anything over there. Also, before he left, the President Trump put Cuba in a terrorist list, just three countries around the world and in that terrorist list. And now Cuba cannot even buy things or buy products or use a bank to finance services because all banks are afraid to be fined by the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
The situation,
mm-hmm.
plus the also in Cuba because of pandemic, tourism is down. Remittance from families are down. The country is starving. I mean, the economy is starving. And this has created desperation on the Cuban population. And to the point that a few weeks ago, I think that 10 days ago, some people went to the street saying, we are hungry, we want, because they really have a lot of need, right? And
mm-hmm.
then
mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, okay, we are going to help the Cuban people, Biden said, we are going to extend a hand to the Cuban people. And I was hoping that he would lift those sanctions that he promised that he would lift, that he was studying. And suddenly he came out and he said, and the way that we extend the hand to the Cuban people is not lifting the sanctions. We are going to try to
mm-hmm.
provide some internet to the Cuban people. I mean, people need medications, people need aspirins, people need food, and he says that he's going to provide some internet. I mean, like something unrealistic because there is not relationship between the people of Cuba and the United States. He said also that he would provide some COVID vaccines from the United States. But the point
mm-hmm.
is that Cuba already developed five vaccines. It's the only country in South America or Latin America that developed not just one, but five vaccines. What they don't have is syringes because
mm-hmm.
the blockade, the embargo prevent Cuba from buying syringes. And everything is kind of a mess, you know. We are so upset with this situation that prevent families to use their own money to send to the families in Cuba, and we don't know what to do. And then finally we say, you know, myself with other Cuban Americans said we need to raise awareness about these cruel and inhuman regulations, and we decide to walk from Miami to Washington, D.C., 1,300 miles, not just walking, but also talking to communities, to
mm-hmm.
different
mm-hmm.
groups, Republicans, Democrats, Christian people, Catholics, it doesn't matter, African Americans,
mm-hmm.
Latinos, everyone, raising awareness and educating communities about how wrong our country is doing. Right now, we have met with hundreds of people, and I didn't find a single person who said that it's okay to prevent families from sending money to families. I didn't find a single person who said that it's okay to prohibit the country to buy things, to buy medications, to basically punish other countries because they sell things to Cuba. This has to stop. And we are very probably like 150 miles from Washington, D.C. We are very tired physically, but at the same time, we are full of hope that the American people is going to wake up about this injustice, and one day I have the certainty that we are going to create finally issues of love between our two countries, that after 62 years of failing policies toward Cuba, trying to overthrow the Cuban government, but at the same time appreciating the Cuban people, the American people is going to realize that this is wrong, and the American people are going to help the brothers and Cuban American sisters and brothers and help us to get rid of this blockade.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. So, okay, so the trip started or the walk started when, and how many miles have you now walked?
Oh, we left the 27th, and we already are in about 1,100 miles. The way that we are doing, we are six people, right? Well, actually seven.
Mm-hmm.
One person have, we have an RV that is our supporting
mm-hmm.
vehicle where we sleep and everything. And then
mm-hmm.
in the morning, we have three different shifts. Two persons start walking 20 miles. And then
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
RV takes the next two, the next group, two persons, the next 20 miles. And the next two persons, 20 miles. And then the
mm-hmm.
RV come back for the first group who finish 20 miles, 20 miles. And at the end of the day, we have 60 miles approximately. And that's the way
okay.
that we have been doing this. Each of us is walking 20 miles every day for the last 20 days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. So what are some of the things that you're looking to accomplish in this walk? And as you are communicating with people, what do you hope to see come out of this?
Well,
I mean, of course,
the
ending
want...
of the blockade, but
yeah,
what other
yeah,
things? Mm-hmm.
Well, first thing, doing something so unusual and so extreme, the goal was to call the attention of the administration, of
mm-hmm.
the Biden administration, to for the media to pay attention to this issue. But unfortunately, corporate media is not very interested in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. something that they prefer to cover all the news, but not that people are walking 1,300 miles for this in a pilgrimage. To second one, we want to bring the petition that we have. We have right now 20,000 signatures. To the White House in a book, and we want to give that to State Department or the White House to show that the will of the Cuban American and Americans and Cubans is that these sanctions are lifted, or at least some of these sanctions are right away lifted. And the third goal that I think that is important here is to educate communities about how bad, cruel, unhuman, un-American is this blockade, is this embargo that have been, these failing policies, something that have been tried again and again and again for 60 years. I mean, if you give a prescription to somebody for 60 years and the prescription doesn't work, don't you think that it's time to change the prescription? But besides that, this is not a prescription to heal people. This is a prescription to kill people. The United States complains sometimes about Cuba and about human rights violations in Cuba, but the biggest human rights violation right now that is happening in Cuba is the blockade that the United States has that is asphyxiating 11 million Cubans. And we have talked to people across the United States. And also we, in the way of teaching people or educating people about these issues, we also learn about all problems that our communities have there, things that we were not aware. Now when we sit down and we talk to people and we explain what is going on in relationship with Cuba, they also
mm-hmm.
talk to us about inequalities, about social injustice, about things that
mm-hmm.
happen in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, for instance, we went in Georgia, we visit this African-American farmer who also have been in Cuba, and we went to exchange with him about his life and everything. And we learned about the injustice that the system creates for African-American farmers. And he explained
mm-hmm.
to me how difficult it is for African-American farmers to get loans, to just do what, to get the support of the government. And we realized after all this march that the embargo, the blockade is not just happening to Cuba. It's happening to many many communities, even in our own country, many inner cities, many places. And that's something that that I really value, because it has been a teaching, a learning experience for us. To the point that my idea, when I arrive to the White House, we are going to be in front of the White House in Lafayette Park the 25th of July, Sunday, from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. And we encourage everybody who wants to support our cause to go over there. But originally, my goal just was talking about the blockade, the embargo, the sanctions. But after meeting, for instance, Willie Hart from Georgia and his problems as an African-American farmer, I promised to this gentleman that we will also talk about the problem that he is facing, because I think that we should fight here as communities. We have to get united to achieve a better world for everyone.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm so glad you really conveyed how this has also helped you in growth and development and having a better understanding of what's going on in this country and in some other areas. So I'm really, really happy to hear that this has been an experience, not just, you know, to make certain that the issue of the blockade is brought greater into a greater forefront, but also that you as well and others are now learning more about each other, which, you know, we talk about solidarity when it comes to issues, and we should, but of course there has to also be solidarity from the human standpoint as well. And it sounds like what you just said, my brother, sounds that has, you know, definitely was something that is being done.
Yes. I think that, and this is the moral of this story, at least of this journey, this pilgrimage, for me, is that we were trying to find an answer and somebody who listened to our own situation, but at the same time, we become listeners and we feel empathy with people who also have problems that we were not aware of before. And that's something that is good, and hopefully we can work together in the future, trying to work for mutual goals and for better communities and for a better world.
Well, you know, of course there's a history with the Cuban people that is very close and embraced with many Africans in America. And so, you know, I think it's important that people know and understand that. I mean, from way, way back, even in terms of the music and the culture, you know, when I was coming up and was listening to music, and particularly when I started learning more about my own history and culture, one of the things that we were introduced to, of course, was the music that generated through Cuba. And it was because, you know, here in America, there was, for a while there, you couldn't even play the drum. The drum at some point in America was, for black folks, for people of African descent, it was illegal to play the drum.
Wow.
And so, yep. And so when some of that dissipated and changed, then we started learning more about our real roots, our real culture, and it was the Cuban people that we were able to get that information from, even more so because from Africa, the slavery that went into the other lands, Cuba was one of the countries that was really maintained the tradition and the culture. So finally, when America kind of began to embrace those traditions, it was really from the Cuban people that a lot of that real solid roots information was then brought into the U.S. So I'm just saying that to say that there, you know, there's a historical connection, really, with our people being united. And I think, again, to now demonstrate that with what you're doing and your team, you know, and hearing how you're literally talking with the people, the masses in our communities, this is definitely, I think, a clear demonstration of real solidarity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and I see, and based on what you said, we have so many things in common in culture, in interest.
Mm-hmm.
We are neighbors. We are 90 miles away. We have so many, we have almost 2 million Cuban Americans living in the United States. There is no reason for keeping these walls. We need bridges. We need relationships. We can benefit each other from having a good relationship. The two
mm-hmm.
years that
mm-hmm.
President Obama was there were proof that a better war between our countries is possible and that everybody could benefit from that, even business.
Mm-hmm.
During the Obama time,
sure.
Cruise lines went to Cuba. American tourists visit Cuba for a while. They
mm-hmm.
learned about the Cuban culture. They had a good time over there. They have contact with Cubans. Also, Cuban people develop business. They start. They sell their products. I mean, it was a good relationship. Things were
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
were getting better between our two countries, and in the countries also signed agreements to fight trade of drugs and all security in the ocean, and now is everything down, you know, and there is
mm-hmm,
no reason
mm-hmm.
just to keep this thing going on. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but if not, I think you might find this to be, you know, really not only of interest, but certainly something I think that can be utilized to help further the efforts, and that is, of course, as you know, and you mentioned as well, with COVID. Well, of course, you know, the incredible medical team that comes out of Cuba that has a COVID treatment that has been proven to work. I mean, certainly that in itself, and particularly right now, to be able to end this this embargo, this blockade, would be, I mean, it could save lives and certainly,
yes.
you know, help in so many ways. So that in itself, I mean, for those that maybe can't relate to the real humane or the self-determination or the other things, I'm sure they can relate to the fact that COVID is real. And
yes.
that, again, we need to look at alternatives. We need to look at other possibilities because, you know, there's a lot of question around the treatment or the vaccine that's now being disseminated. And people need to have the capability to have a choice. And, again, with ending that blockade, that would at least allow more people to have other decisions or other possibilities. So that in itself, I think, is another perfect example as to why we need to all, you know, really look at this thing very closely, see the benefit. This has so many the benefits certainly outweigh anything of what these politicksters are talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And all these, most of these policies are based in things that happened 60 years ago. I mean,
right.
in problems that when the Soviet Union still exists, when there was a Cold War. But today, all that past already disappeared. Myself,
right.
I'm already 56 years old, and I was born already after the Cuban Revolution, after the missing crisis. I mean, there is new generations of people that have nothing to do with what happened during those years that are suffering the consequences still. Going back to what you say about scientific cooperation, I remember during the Obama times that Cuban doctors went to Africa and they went
yeah.
to fight Ebola,
yeah.
the virus, and American...
Yeah.
Our troops helped the Cuban doctors with logistics and,
yes.
and with moving the Cuban doctors around. And that was an example of good cooperation between the two countries for all the people around the world. Also in
yes.
Haiti, during
yes.
the earthquake
yes.
A few years ago,
yes.
American troops work together with Cuban doctors to help the people of Haiti.
Yeah.
And I mean, there is so much potential for collaboration between our two countries that is we are wasting time and life here. And it's not just that. It's also that America, the United States, is prohibiting American citizens from helping their families. This is something completely. I mean, like, I don't have words to describe how bad and how inhuman is this.
So I'm going to go to Brother Lee for a moment. As well to join us for this part of the conversation, because I want to begin to look at more about what we can do to better support. And, of course, Brother Lee, you, of course, know that this past month there's been like a whole month of activities that you know, all over the country that was in support of ending the embargo. The blockade, rather. Could you kind of just recap about what happened at the UN for those who don't know? Again, just briefly to let people know that did happen.
So, Empress, I believe, can you hear me?
Yes,
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Empress, less than 2 weeks ago. Every year there's a vote that comes up around whether or not the blockade should be lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And each year you have the majority of the world saying let's put an end to the immoral, illegal Cuba blockade. This year I believe the vote was 186-2, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
If those
right.
are the correct
mm-hmm.
numbers, someone who had the numbers mm-hmm. can correct me.
Right.
And the only two countries that supported it was U.S. and Israel. Now, in terms of from the political sense, you know, it comes to show that U.S. actually is U.S. stands in isolation in terms of when it comes to this issue. The rest of the world understands that this is a crime against humanity, illegal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what mm-hmm. also shows that, but what it also shows in Brazil, U.S. determined to rule by force and might. And we know might don't make it right. And at some point in time,
mm-hmm.
you know, we will overcome this is the force of might.
Mm-hmm,
and the best
mm-hmm.
way I can say maybe how we could address this question, and I think Fidel Castro said it years back when he was critiquing the power of the U.S. and how to break their power. He made a statement in reference to the whole world that each country must take on the challenges and challenge the U.S. in terms of their illegal and immoral behavior. And take
mm-hmm.
their bet on and take their lumps. Cuba been taking on that challenge since its inception from 1959. I believe the embargo was put in place or the blockade was put in place in 1961, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think the best way we can overcome that impetus is I think all the countries must be principled and take a position against the U.S. when it's come
mm-hmm.
to that. Now, this may say idealism because you know that many times when countries have certain economic leverage over you,
right,
it can
right.
force you and punish you. But
mm-hmm.
if you're going to be principled, as Brother Kwame Ture once stated, that alleviate the suffering of your people, then you must share in it. And I think that's the same thing that Brother Fidel was saying in terms of each country must take its lump.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
each country comes, you know, politically make a decision, constantly say, you know, we would challenge and take on the unjust behavior of the U.S. Just collectively we have to do this. I think
mm-hmm.
we'll create the climate and the material basis to change this course and give Cuba and other countries more space to find a way to either overcome it or put an end to it. That's number one. But see, again, that depends on the political will and education organization of the people in all of these various countries.
Mm-hmm,
I think if
we're going
to be principled, we can continue to let Cuba take all the hits and we're going to share them and take them on. So if we are willing to do that, I think that's important. Now, internally, I think politically in America, particularly in the African community and just communities, we must change the narrative and put pressure on these so-called politicians and make me a seal. No vote against the blockade, no vote for Cuba. I don't give a hell who get it. You're not going to get it. The Democratic Party will not get it. Because of your reality, you're talking about the same party. So we want to stop playing games. So that put the pressure on them and said, look, okay, you say you can't do anything? No problem. You don't get our vote. We just let it maintain and let it be a one-party state. Let the Republican Party dominate. There's no fundamental discipline to anyway. But we must tell these politicians to, it's no more viable to continue to support this policy. But more importantly, I think this ballot will be worn out in the streets among the people. I think this is a role that the African community can play a key role. Because, you know, historically, changes normally happen to take place and are guided, initiated by African people and their movements, their struggles inside the United States. And many times it has consequences throughout the world. You know, a lot of times through my travels, there are discussions among other people around the issue of what African people are going to do inside the United States. People don't realize the historical relationships they have had and played towards bringing about change and how people view, their behavior, their actions. And we don't realize the impact of that behavior and actions. So I think, Empress, again, this is where history comes to play an important role, understanding those kind of things that you can impact and have impact and the power that you do have. Again, this power cannot come about until we are properly organized in political parties. Because parties at this stage of time in our development is the highest form of expression of the people. So our people must form a strong, independent, self Pan-African Revolutionary Party that will direct the actions of our people. So we really can exert our pressure and our interest on the power to be. And I think another issue is the issue of looking at corporations. Some kind of way we've got to punish corporations. These corporations can continue to benefit from the suffering of the Cuban people and not pay prices. So in that sense, I think this is the mode or the direction we need to look at. This is the kind of position we need to understand. If we start operating from that position of strength, we can change the condition being of how we are today to forcing these forces to not to have the kind of leverage that they have today that they can dictate and impose on Cuba and other countries. You know, if I'm not mistaken, down there, one-third of the whole world, U.S. has embargo or blockade against. They have some kind of sanctions. I don't know if you're listening or you know that. And sanctions and blockades are no more than a lower form of warfare. So reality is a war. You know, one thing we got to be careful with this semantics in terms of this concept of how we define things. Just because I'm at war with you and tell you that, I'm not at war and call it another name, no means that you're not at war with us. Wars come through all kinds of forms. And this blockade really a form of a war, an act of war. And we must understand it from that context. And if this country going to do any wars in our name, allow them to do that, not in the name of the people. Because ever since, I believe, after World War II, and I know the most recent wars, it has been proven that wars used to have an impact on the so-called economy. It was stimulated. But most recently, the last 20, 30 years, wars now has no relationship to the stimulation economy. What it does now only increase the wealth of a few individuals. So why in the hell we are fighting these wars? That's the question we must come to understand. And stop being, people pawns and buffalo soldiers and fighting the rich man wall. So again, that's a question of political education organizations. So this is something how we need to look at and take a approach to that, Sister Empress.
Okay. Well, I'm going back to pause for a moment. And also, Reverend Lee, let me ask you this. Did you know there was a resolution that was passed in Chicago in February?
I'm not familiar with that particular
one. Yep. Okay. So, and this is what I was referring to earlier in saying there, and you're right on point, Brother Lee, because to put pressure on these so-called elected officials. Now, Brother Carlos, let me ask you before I kind of go to why I raised that question. So, do you know of any kind of political legislation or people that you've been introduced to or have worked with? Are there any people in the political arena that you know of that's really, you know, working to fight this embargo, this blockade?
Are you talking to me or to?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I'm talking to you. Uh-huh. In your travels and in your work, are there some politicians who have stepped
up? Well, yes, there are politicians in Washington D.C. As a matter of fact, a few weeks ago, the Congress, the 80 members of Congress, signed a letter asking mm-hmm. President Biden to lift the embargo, to lift the protest
okay.
in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
80 members of Congress. Unfortunately, politics is very difficult. Right now,
mm-hmm.
the Senate is divided 50-50, right? And one
mm-hmm.
of the Democrat senators, his name is Bud Menendez, he, even when he is a Democrat, he is of Cuban American
mm-hmm.
origin, and he opposed
mm-hmm.
to anything that lifts sanctions on Cuba. And
mm-hmm.
the balance of the Senate, the president right now has, it seems to have other priorities, that Cuba is not a priority for President Biden, and he has to keep those votes online, 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
this senator basically can do whatever or can tell the president, don't do this, and I will
mm-hmm.
do this for you. You know how politics works. And that's what many people are saying, that since
mm-hmm.
he's stuck in the Senate with this division of power, this balance of power, he doesn't want to risk to do anything to upset Menendez. And
mm-hmm.
that's what is going on too. Yeah, but there are many members of Congress, also Senator Leahy, many members of Congress who would like to see this change and would like to see basically the sanctions lifted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm glad to hear that, and hopefully we can get the list of politicians who have taken a stand is saying that this needs to end. We need to see who they are, okay, and then that way we can also further connect and create perhaps a coalition that includes them to the greater extent, to another extent of taking other action. But here's why. In February of this past year, on February the 5th to be exact, in Chicago, the finance head, whose name was the chair, was Ron Wyden. He introduced a bill to lift the Cuban blockade.
Yeah.
Now, this was February the 5th. Now, they literally voted on it on February 24th, and the entire city council, well, I think it was the entire, but anyway, the city council approved this legislation. So what I'm saying is,
Hello.
Can you hear me? Okay. So the city of Chicago has in fact had passed legislation to end the Cuban blockade. Now, this just happened in February of this year, but a whole city has now said. And in fact, I'm going to read a quote, if I can find it. Give me a one moment. Okay. The Chicago City Council passed on Wednesday a resolution demanding the end of the U.S. blockade on Cuba. Resolution R2020-612 highlights that, and this is the quote, Chicago's citizens institutions and businesses are also negatively affected by these added restrictions that violate their right to travel and harm economic opportunities that enhance trade with Cuba that would be possible or initiated. This was put out in February by the city of Chicago. You see, so my point is this, family, if Chicago can do this, other cities can do this. You see, helps to build the momentum, that helps to educate, that helps to mobilize, etc. So, again, while this past month for June there were, again, caravans and forums and so forth, here's other actions. And as Brother Lee just said, to create an interaction with your local politicians, that's an excellent start. And here we have the example, the city of Chicago, one of the largest cities, by the way, particularly of black folks, of African so-called Americans.
Yeah, and I think that Chicago is not unique in that regard. Seattle also passed a resolution, and even when these are non-binding resolutions, because the foreign policy of the United States is executed by the federal government, it educates communities and it shows the will of the people to leave the blockade, to leave the embargo. If many more cities do that, it will show the same thing that we were able to witness during this trip, that the American people, the majority of the American people, want to end this blockade, want to have good relationship between Cuba and the United States. Yes.
So, and yes, and so let me just read a little bit more because I want those who are listening to know. Again, these are some of the key bullet points. This memorandum also says that the resolution highlights that the city of Chicago would greatly benefit by the restoration of trade with the Republic of Cuba through permitting the export of industrial and agricultural products to its neighboring nations of 11 million people and the importation of Cuban products useful to Chicago, such as life-saving medicine, etc. And then it goes on to say, moreover, businesses and institutions of Chicago have expressed a very strong interest in providing their products and services to Cuba, importing Cuban products, and cooperating with Cuban institutions in the development of pharmaceutical medical devices as well as biomedical research and procedures. This is what the memorandum says. And so, again, this highlights really clearly, this highlights just some of the real importance of ending this blockade in a way where millions can benefit, millions of people can benefit all across the world. This is a win-win situation. Yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you something. And now you're talking about medications and all that. Cuba developed a vaccine for cancer, for lung cancer. And the vaccine has proved that extend the expectancy of life, the life expectancy of the people. The person who get vaccinated with this, person who suffer lung cancer, can live many more years. And because of blockade, because of embargo, Americans cannot access to that vaccine. It's just something I recently saw a documentary of an American who suffered lung cancer, and he had to travel to Mexico and do this illegally and buy the different vaccines for certain period of time, and then come to the United States and bring the vaccines contraband, basically, to live, right? to live, to be able to live. We could benefit, and Americans can could benefit a lot from also from Cuban medicine, because they have proved they have very professional and good scientists over there. Yeah.
Wow, absolutely. Well, I mean, again, there are numerous reasons as to why, you know, this blockade needs to be ended. But certainly, you know, what we've just heard gives some very clear and I think just on point, particularly with what we're seeing with the health crisis that we've been facing for the past almost 2 years. I mean, you know, it goes without saying. Okay, so what we're going to do is open up the phone lines. Brother Lee, before we do that, did you have a comment or thought about what I just read in terms of Chicago?
No, I think it can be used as a model. There are many other cities that have done that. The question becomes, how do you put the pressure on Congress? Because if I'm not mistaken, the way they wrote the law, in order to reverse or eradicate the blockade, it got to be done by Congress. And so the question becomes, even with these cities and everything, how do you transform that kind of power, those kind of climate conditions to force Congress to get rid of that law of the blockade? Now, one other thing that people can do, everywhere these Congress politicians live, make them and their family uncomfortable. Also put pressure on the businesses where they own, invest, and support, and force them to take a position. But the question comes again, it's got to be done the way where Congress will have to so-called vote out. But ultimately, the real deal is the people. If the people decide they really want this once to get organized, you know, they will make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, and I hear that, but for me, because, you know, I'm about organizing. So for me, it's like if you have that kind of legislation that's passed in a major city, we're talking about, in fact, from what I read, it said that this was Chicago's the largest city that this legislation has been passed in. So my point is, if the city officials on that ground level have passed that legislation, for me, that enables a coalition or a committee or something to happen in the city. And then from there, because it's saying businesses want to do business with Cuba, institutions want to do business with Cuba, or, you know, want to interact, that can create, you know, a campaign. Or you understand what I'm saying? So,
Empress, there's a disconnect when you look at the political process. A lot of times cities may take one position, but their representative for the state will be on the opposite side. For example,
I get that. I understand very clearly. But what I'm also saying is, because I've seen it. I've seen it here in Philadelphia, for example. One thing has to lead to the other. And again, if there's no effort to even try to do that, then of course that's not going to happen. But as you all know in politics, every now and then there's an upset. That's the nature of the game. So what I'm saying is that if something has been at least done, then what's the next step? At least you have now a catalyst or something to draw from. So my point is this. Those business
I'm in agreement with you. I said create the climate to create the material conditions for change.
Right.
So I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
And particularly when you talk about business people, those business people are connected to voters because they have clientele too. You know, but, you know, again, we're not going to belabor that point. I'm just saying, you know, I'm just looking at other possibilities if those efforts are actually made. And that's the part that I tend to see, you know, kind of gets lost in the sauce, is that, like you said, a step will happen, but then it gets left there. And sometimes that's, you know, it doesn't have to be left. Sometimes sometimes. But anyway, so, okay, we have a couple of callers, I think, and we're going to go to caller at 9435. So 9435, your mic is open, and welcome to this segment of New Day.
Thank you, Sister Empress. This is Bambush.
How are you, Baba?
I'm doing good, Sister. I would like to just comment on your last statement because not only as Chicago voted a resolution calling for the elimination of the blockade, but so as 18 other cities are have either voted a resolution or in the process of voting this resolution, including New York City. Plus, in Illinois, the state assembly, not just the city of Chicago, but the state assembly has also voted a resolution calling for the elimination of the blockade, which was heavily influenced and very popular with the Southern Illinois senators, because their constituency are farmers who have been really messed up by not being able to sell to China and other places that the Trump administration put embargoes on. So they're hoping that they will also be able to sell wheat, soya beans, potatoes, stuff like that, to Cuba. So this movement for the passing of these resolutions is potentially a push to ensure that Congress people from these states know that while they're sitting there in Congress, they have to be able to rectify the votes that they make with the votes that the people in their states are making concerning the issue of Cuba. So that's a very good thing. I just wanted to thank our brother for all that he's doing, for the walk that he's making, and for the education that he's doing towards the people that he meets, because there is a host of confusion, half-truths, lies about Cuba out there in the national press from our leadership, the political leadership, the religious leadership, and that it behooves us that we have to be the ones who take it up on ourselves to seek the truth and make it known. So I just wanted to thank him so much for the work he's doing.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you.
Indeed.
Thank you.
I also am basically in agreement with Brother Lee's analysis of the problems and issues, because Fidel is right. Ultimately, it will have to be the people of America that lift this blockade.
All right, wonderful. Well, thank you for your comments and also for sharing that information, because, see, again, I didn't know. You know, I had not heard that before. And this is, you know, the point that we're making is that we've got to make certain that this kind of information, because even though there's problems with, you know, taking it to the next level and all of that, just to get the information to the masses in itself, you know, to make sure that we're doing that, definitely, you know, creates greater synergy or creates greater, you know, capabilities and so forth. Just to know these things, you know, they say information and knowledge is indeed powerful. And so,
exactly.
Again, thank you for sharing that, because I did not know it was so many other states, you know, that wow. Okay.
Well, currently there are two states. There's Illinois and one other.
Yeah,
but there are
cities,
at least 18
cities
going through the process.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, well, yeah. And I think, again, it's so important given the fact that we're getting ready to observe, of course, a very important holiday or commemoration day for Cuba.
Yes.
Somebody's making a lot of noise in the background. You cannot do that. It interrupts the dialogue. So please make sure you are cognizant that your phone is like a microphone. Would someone like to comment on the upcoming commemoration day? That'll be, I think, on Sunday.
Sunday, I think brothers invited everybody to join them in Washington, D.C., and
okay.
their buses that are coming down from New York. I don't know if Pennsylvania has any buses yet, but New York, New Jersey is jointly busing people in, and there will be people from the Midwest and the East Coast in D.C. who can afford to come in to not just welcome the long-distance marchers from Florida, but also to, again, raise the whole question of Cuba and the confusion that exists, especially in our media. And this walk that our brothers have done, it reminds me of the Native Americans who, in 1982, I believe, march from Alcatraz, to D.C. and demonstrated against Bureau of Indian Affairs for messing over them, basically, since they have signed treaties with the United States back in the past. It's that kind of march. It's that kind of event, and people need to come out and support that. If you're in the area, if you're in the East Coast, Midwest, see if there's a bus. If there's no buses, see if you can get one. Ask some of these churches. Some of these schools has buses that if you're students, maybe you can get the school's bus. So come to D.C. on the 25th to not only welcome our brothers from Florida, but also to have some serious dialogue and maybe even a strategy session or two on how do you lift this illegal, immoral, and racist blockade? How do you return occupied Guantanamo to Cuba? How do you eliminate the travel ban, which our brother talked about earlier, and the fact that even families have problems traveling to Cuba today. You know, in the United States promised that on an annual basis they would give over 78,000 something visas to Cuba each year for people who wanted to come to visit, not necessarily to immigrate to the U.S., but to come and visit at least. Now, over the past 6 or 7 years, they're lucky if 200 visas a year have been received by Cuban Americans or by Cubans to come to America. And so, therefore, the only way you can come to America, if you're a Cuba, to either get on a raft or come through the borders on Mexico, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's not the fault of Cuba why these people cannot travel. Cuba allows their people to travel, and their only objection is that you should have a visa from the country you're going to. And that's with any country. If you don't have a visa to travel from the U.S. to, say, somewhere in Europe, the U.S. Border Patrol will stop you from traveling. So we have to see the reality of these things and don't listen to the propaganda that say people are just escaping from Cuba and they're getting on rafts. There's a reason for that.
And I want to make a point there. There is an agreement, as brother was saying, that the United States was supposed to give 20,000 visas annually. This was an agreement that goes back to Clinton years when there was an immigration crisis. And by trying to starve the Cuban people, what is this accomplishing? If somebody is getting no food, no medications, the only way that you have to survive and to help your family is by immigrating, by trying to escape from that place that is closed down, that no commerce is going there, that the United States has declared an economic war on Cuba. Mm-hmm. And then it's something very, very difficult. I mean, this situation in the middle of a pandemic, trying to even make the blockade, the embargo harder, it has the potential of creating an immigration crisis for the United States. And it would be wise from the perspective of the White House to avoid that immigration crisis and to avoid that hundreds of thousands of Cubans just get rough and try to escape from that inferno that is a blockade country just by allowing commerce with Cuba and having a good relationship with Cuba. Yeah. The United States right now is investing and trying to fund programs in Guatemala, in Honduras, trying to avoid that the people from Honduras and in Central America immigrate massively through the border, right? And then at the same time, creating an explosive situation in Cuba that is going to provoke massive immigration to the United States. That's one point that I want to make. And another point that I want to make, and I want to encourage everyone, especially African-American communities that have been so supportive during this journey. Even Black Lives Matter recently made a statement saying that they asked the United States to lift the blockade, the embargo on Cuba. And we're asking our African-American brothers and sisters to join us. If you are close to the area of Washington, D.C., join us on the 25th of July, this Sunday, in front of the White House, Lafayette Park, in Lafayette Square, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. And we also are facing the backlash of right wingers who doesn't want the blockade to be lifted. They want to prevent us to protest there. They want to intimidate us. And we need the support of communities of Latinos, African American, everybody who is in the side of love and think that this is something good for humanity and something good for the Cuban people. I'm asking you, imploring you to be there with us.
All right. All right. As we say in our community, ashe. Okay, well, family, you all heard it. Again, if there's any more questions or comments, you can press one now. We certainly would love to hear your thoughts and anything you might want to add in on this conversation. Let me also do a sidebar and let folks know what we're doing in terms of the Million Women March and its universal movements. We have a very, very important meeting coming up in a couple of months. And so we will be ready to make our position very clear in this matter. And it is, of course, what we call the call to black women. And the call to black women, of course, is a part of demanding a meeting with President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. We have already sent the request to meet with them separately. And there are five issues that we are planning to present at this point. Of course, the issues of reparatory justice, of course, the issue of the violence and abuse of our women and girls that has risen nationwide to the degree that it must now be addressed as it was in 1951. But also, we reserve the right. We reserve the right to make certain that we can have an alternative to the vaccination, or the vax, as they call it, for the COVID virus. And, of course, that means that our selection at this point in time, which is the only one we know of, is the treatment that Cuba has. And so, again, that is on our agenda as Black women. We reserve the right. Our people deserve the right to have an alternative. So I just want to give folks a sidebar to that, because we have a meeting coming up next week to talk more about that. So for those women who are interested, now is the time to get involved, because planning session is at hand. Okay, let me check to see if there is anyone that has a question or a comment. Looks like, okay, yeah, we do. Caller, you are at 9372, and remember, everyone, your phone is like a mic, so if you're doing something else, put yourself on mute, please, because we're picking up sounds. But caller at 9372, your mic is now open, and welcome to the second of the new day.
Hey, how about you, girl, guys? Everybody's okay?
That's a whole nother story. I'll tell you about that one.
I know. We're all on the phone, so we're still here. So whatever
You got that right. Absolutely.
So listen. I remember when former President Obama lifted that embargo, and then Trump put, now I came in the phone late, so I came in the conversation late, so I may have missed it, but President Obama had lifted that embargo, because I know that some friends of mine went to Cuba, and Trump put it back on, right? And I know they've been reversing a lot of Trump mess that he did. So, I mean, did you actually ask Biden to lift it? Because, you know, Trump just kind of did it out of his racist behavior, you know? But I'm just wondering. So, you know, if you could update me on that, brother, and I appreciate your coming on and telling us exactly what the situation is.
Well, the embargo per se was not lifted. What Obama did, and it was great, he lifted many sanctions that he could lift as a president. For example, he created new categories for travelers, meaning that he created a category called people-to-people support that allowed Americans to go over there in cruise lines, or just kind of, they don't want to call it tourists, but it was kind of tourism, right? And they have certain regulations to follow, but it was basically easy to go over there. That's what Obama did, and it was a great step in the right direction. Also, he encouraged private enterprise in Cuba. He allowed unlimited sending remittances. Basically, you could send as much money as you can to your families, and they can create a business over there, a restaurant, different things, and that helped the economy a lot. I mean, the embargo was not lifted because supposedly it's just an act of Congress that can lift the embargo. But he did great things, and as soon as Trump came to power, he just erased everything that Obama did and went further, to the point that we cannot even send money to our families now. And you came late to the program, but I was explaining that President Biden, he promised that he will resume and go back to the policies of Obama, but in 7 months, he have done nothing. And he actually said that he will keep the sanctions that Trump put there, because he got some political pressure from Florida, from Democrats in Florida, that Democrats yours in name, because they in the sense of Cuba, they are more like kind of Trumpism, right? And he's listening to these people. He is listening to Senator Bob Menendez, who is a Democrat, but he's against lifting sanctions. And so far in 7 months, he have done nothing. He promised and he said that he's studying the issue and studying the issue, but he have done nothing, actually. Yeah.
Because I mean, I know I have a lot of friends. I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear. Go ahead.
I think this administration not only has done nothing, it has done more. From my understanding, there has been additional new rules and policies and obstacles, or 243 new rules and policies to intensify images blockade.
Mm.
And probably the game that they will play is they create these additional obstacles, and then at a later date they say, well, we're going to negotiate and we could take away so many, and therefore, you know, we try to negotiate in fairness. But they must do these kind of things. We have taken away, they create 243, and they may say, well, we take away 43 of these things. Now you have to negotiate with us. These are the things we want. But I think it's just a continuation of these tactics to try to undermine the interests of the Cuban people and force the people to try to go against, you know, the interests of their government. Again, it's a form of warfare. And ultimately, at some point, the people inside the United States must come to the realization that ultimately, you know, these behaviors are not acceptable, and they must fight it on the ground, you know, to make these things change.
Yeah,
I want to add some historical fact here that maybe is important for analyzing and understanding many of these things. In 1960, Subsecretary Marjorie of State, he wrote a secret memo to President, I think that it was Eisenhower, and he wrote that in order to overthrow Castro and the new revolutionary government, it was impossible to do it in elections because this government was very popular. The only way to do it is by designing policies, and this is there. It's something written by the Subsecretary of State of the United States. It was the best way to do it in a very, very, in a way that couldn't be seen by others, just like hiding, is by trying to starve the Cuban people, to make the Cuban people hungry, and then that's the only way that they will create desperation. This is the language of the memo. And through that, then the government eventually, people get dissatisfied and people will rebel against that government. And it seems that today we are living through that memo. Cuba is in a pandemic, and the United States is just to the point where people is desperate. People are hungry. People don't have medications. And when I say this, I mean, it's the worst situation that Cuba have faced in the last, I'd say, 50 years, because it's really the pandemic has created an extraordinary situation with tourist industries. There is no tourism going over there, and tourism was a main source of income for the country. Also, remittances, the money that we send to our families, it was very important, right? Like third source of income. And we shouldn't forget that countries need to buy fuel, need to buy medical supplies, need to buy things just for the daily needs of the country. And Cuba right now have lost like 80% of their income, the country as a country. And the Mr. Subsecretary Marjorie memorandum is basically in full place. It's very, it's like it was written for today. Yeah.
Jeez. You know, the other thing, I know I worked in the healthcare field for many years, and I know a number of physicians who were literally trained in Cuba because Cuba was training physicians for free. This was, I know, back in the 80s and 90s. And so I was wondering if there is a I don't know, through whatever the university or whomever it was that was training all these physicians that were coming back to America and then passing whatever test they had to. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is to work with the universities that did the training to identify who those physicians were that were trained in Cuba and try to get a coalition of Cuban physicians, of American physicians that were trained in Cuba to, you know, to gather coalition together or whatever, you know, gather together to kind of put pressure on the government. You know, that could be another coalition. I'm not sure if I'm explaining it correctly. I'm trying to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think
that would be a great idea. You know, maybe it's a little bit difficult to find all the doctors who were trained. I have to because I'm in the preparing the kids here for tomorrow. We have to start walking at 4 a.m. But I want to, and I have to leave. But I want to end my intervention with a good note related to what you just said right now. In my trip from Miami, when we were in Atlanta, Georgia, we were received by a group of like 30 members of the community from different backgrounds, you know, very diverse group. And I had one African-American father who came to me, and I always asked, why are you here? Why are you supporting the lifting of the embargo? And this African-American father, and I record that, actually, and send it to different journalists, and they put it in the Q1 TV. This African-American father says, because Cuba saved my son. And the first thing that came to my mind was that the son was sick or some type of rare disease or something, that Cuba have some medication, right? And I said, how Cuba saved your son? And then he said, because we live in an area where many of our children end up either in jail, in prison, in drugs, or killed by the police, or killed by gang members. And my son got a scholarship in the International Medical School of in Cuba, and he went over there and he studied over there, and he, after 6 years, he came back. He was a doctor, and now he is a doctor serving in Georgia as in the community, serving his community. Cuba saved my son. And that was something very for me, it was very emotional that he was saying that his son was saved from the dangers that he could face as a young man, because he got the opportunity to study medicine in Cuba for free, and the International School of Medicine received every year members of minorities in the United States, from the Latino, from the African American community. Right now, the pastor for peace, the leader of the movement, she's preparing some group of African-American students who are going to be going to Cuba for the next 5 years to study and become doctors and come back to serve their communities.
Yes. I think that's a powerful coalition, especially given the times that we're living in right now. I think that's a powerful coalition. There's got to be a database somewhere of all the people, you know, at the universities that were trained. You know, and I just, you know, I'll be praying for you, you know, because I think this is really important. I was actually supposed to go to Cuba with a group of friends, but I unfortunately some other things came up. I'll just leave it that like that. But it's one of the places that I've always wanted to travel to. And the medical corps that you have, I thought I was sending a donation to the medical corps of Cuba, and it turned out that there's some other medical corps here in the U.S., and that's who it was going to. And I was really upset, you know, because I thought I was sending it to Cuba. So, you know, I just wish you luck, and just please keep us posted you know, because I think this is really critical. I mean, I know it's because Castro, I mean, you know, he backed us up in South Africa. He backed us up in some of the other countries in Africa with his defense army. You know, he actually said troops. And so he was a threat, you know, at that time. But, I mean, like, we're in 2021 now. You know what I mean? And Castro and his brother, you know, they're not there anymore. You know, so just to have the people suffering like that. And you said Eisenhower wrote this letter to let them. Oh, my God. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well,
so, yeah.
I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be here. I want to thank everyone, Brother Lee, everyone there. I have to go for preparing for tomorrow. We have still a long way to go. It's not that long. It's just 120 miles, but still I have to make everybody to go to bed here and, you know.
Right. Okay. Before you go, how can people stay in touch with you?
Well, we have a petition called Puentes de Amor, Puentes, Puentes, like Bridges of Love, the translation in Spanish.com. And, and also Carlos Lasso, if you go to Facebook, Carlos Lasso, El Profe, the teacher. I have a page with a lot of like 65,000 followers. I post every day things about what we do, videos, and people really enjoy those videos. I mean, and to the point that like sometimes we have in one day for one video we made like 100,000 views. It's very popular, the page. And you can find it there. Lasso, L-A-S-S-O. Carlos Lasso, yes. Yes.
L-A-C-O.
And I'm currently a teacher in Seattle, Washington. I also, if you go Carlos Lasso in YouTube, you will see many videos with me and my students singing in Cuba with a Cuban kid. It's really, I mean, it's easy to find me there. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity, and God bless everyone.
Yes, you God as well, you. And continued success. Onward
thank
to
you.
Victory. All right, so we're going to go back to Brother Lee, and first we'll go back to Brother Bombozi, see if he has some closing comments for us, and then we'll have Brother Lee to close us out. Brother Bombozi, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. You have some closing comments for us?
Can you hear me?
Yes. You have some closing comments for us?
Well, I would just like to thank you. Thank you so much for always all the work that you do to bring consciousness to the people, because it is clear that consciousness don't fall from the sky. Consciousness is something that one, we have to work to bring, and two, we have to work to get, to accept.
That's right. Yeah.
So thank you so much, sister, and thanks to your other callers and especially to your guests for the information that he brought.
Absolutely.
And I think that we just have to now continue to struggle.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Baba. All right. Brother Lee, your closing comments for tonight.
I'll make about two or three comments to your listening audience. It's nothing new. Number one, if you truly want to help Cuba, the only way and the best way you can do this is to be organized. When you are organized, you can think clearly. When you are organized, you can make better decisions. When you are organized, that's the only way you can defeat the enemy. Cuba lead a group of organized forces. That's number one. So join the organization that are doing something and be organized as we continue to fight this battle to try to end this blockade. That's number one. Number two, when we talk about the blockade, we also have to talk about those kind of impact that you may cannot see. And this impact I'm speaking to is they are trying to isolate Cuba and its people. Now, psychologically, and when you talk about human development, when human beings are isolated and they don't interact well with human beings, you begin to lose your human qualities. This is why it's important when we ever get a chance to have a interaction with the Cuban people. One of the ways you can do this is to come and join African Awareness Association annual trip to Cuba. We have an annual African Black History Education and Culture Tour trip to Cuba. This year we'll be leaving on the 27th D.C., returning back on the 3rd of June, 2022. Come and join us. Come and show your appreciation. But mainly to go there to learn, to see, and get a better understanding of the Cuban Revolution and how we can benefit from it, but more importantly, to interact with the people, to create friendship, to create support bases where you will have friends inside of Cuba who have friends outside of Cuba, throughout Cuba. Because as you know, when we talk about those who may have support bases on the outside, one of the contradictions of that support base is it tends to cater to those who was privileged as first and left Cuba. And they are in the position to give back to their families. But what about the rest of the Cubans who didn't have families to go and work on the outside, particularly the Africans? But we said the best way to do this is to end the blockade, and Cuba can take care of itself. And last point I would just would like to make is that, our people need to be organized. We need a political party that will direct the energies of our people, that will understand the necessity of Pan-Africanism and allow Africa to be the base that we must wage our struggle to benefit African people all over the world. To find out more about this concept of Pan-Africanism and a political party that seeks to do just that, we would like to invite you to go to this website under the banner of the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, by going to www.a-aprp.gc.org. Check out, read it, and to come to agree to what we're saying, to come to join us. Help us move our people forward. Let's get organized, and we stand always ready for the revolution. We thank you, Sister Empress, for allowing us to share our understanding of this particular issue of why we must join the forces as it relates to putting an end to this illegal and more racist blockade against Cuba.
All right. Well, thank you, Brother Lee. It was definitely an informative and very powerful dialogue for tonight. A lot of information was provided, and I certainly learned some things. I'm sure those that are listening kind of picked up a few things as well. So it's all good. And again, we certainly wish, Carlos Lagos to, continued success, certainly, as we move again onward to victory. All right, family, we're going to close the session now. I want to thank Sister Sheila for chiming in, coming in and bringing some thoughts and comments. And we're going to do some follow-up because I like to hear, the suggestions and all of that, but I also like to make sure that we try to, do the things that are suggested. And I certainly did not know that it was as many cities that have actually passed some legislation. And it just lets us know that, certain steps can be made and done, and it will only help to further other kinds of initiatives. And so here in Philadelphia, I'm pretty certain that no legislation has been passed. And again, the more we do, the more it inspires our people, the more it educates our people. And as Brother Barbosa mentioned, it helps to raise the conscious level. And that's always an excellent point and start for more radical or more evolved actions. All right, family, we're going to close this session out. And again, we want to thank everyone that tuned in and let folks know that this broadcast did happen tonight because they can certainly hear it at any given time. Once we close out, it'll be there in the archives. So for those who might have gotten the announcement late, It's okay because you can certainly hear the report broadcast at any time you'd like, okay? All right, family, we're going to close it out, and y'all know what we do and say right about now. We're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep, but remember, there will not be any peace until there's really some justice. And you know what we say, if there's no justice, there's no what, y'all?
There's no peace.
I know that's right. That was strong. I like that. All right.
If you'd like to add, mm-hmm. we'd like to add to it, no organization, no power.
All right. All right, family, mm-hmm. and with that said, the We Charge Genocide 21 is coming. Remember, September 4th, we will be at the United Nations. This weekend coming, we will have our virtual conference and a special tribute to none other than Saint Queen Mother Moore. The conference will kick off on Friday. For more information, just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. If you're already on our e-list, you'll be getting it tomorrow. And feel free to pass it on. Again, we'll be paying tribute to the great Queen Mother Moore, who we now also call Saint Queen Mother Moore. All right, y'all. Excellent conversation. Thank you much. Talk Black with you later. Peace out.
Forward.